Hello, and welcome to our program Reader's Digest, brought to you by Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center in San Antonio. I'm John Fisher, and during the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from Reader's Digest here on Owl Radio. First, wellness from thehealthy.com. That's Reader's Digest's health website. Vertigo is surprisingly common. Here's how to handle it. Karen Robach writes, "When the World Spins," in Reader's Digest. One morning last winter, Lynn Smith was doing a series of gentle stretches on a mat in her living room, trying to loosen up a stiff lower back. When the 56-year-old sat up, she felt a bit strange. "I started to feel dizzy in a way I had not felt before," she says. Then, when she got into bed that night, she felt as if the room was spinning around her. She went to her doctor, who put a name to her experiences: vertigo. While it's often described as a sensation of motion, vertigo is more complex than a dizzy spell. People can experience ringing in the ears, loss of balance, double vision, and trouble swallowing, depending on what's causing the vertigo. Episodes can last anywhere from a few minutes to a few days. Although it can affect people of all ages, vertigo is most common in midlife and beyond and is more prevalent in women, though experts don't fully understand why, says Terry Fife, a neurologist at the Barrow Neurological Institute in Phoenix, who specializes in balance disorders. Nearly 40% of adults in the United States will experience vertigo at least once in their lifetime. It's important to understand that vertigo is not a disease in itself. It's a symptom. There are many reasons why someone may have vertigo, but it generally falls into one of two types: peripheral vertigo and central vertigo. With peripheral vertigo, the most common cause is benign paroxysmal positional vertigo, or BPPV. It develops when canaliths, that's tiny crystal-like calcium particles that naturally occur inside the ear, become loose and move deeper into the inner ear canals. As they roll around, they can disrupt the transmission of information to the brain about balance. That's why the sensation that the room is spinning can strike when someone leans back to look up into a high kitchen cupboard, bends over to tie a shoe, or, as Smith discovered, folds over in a yoga pose. Less common causes are a head injury or Meniere's disease, a rare inner ear condition. Central vertigo is less common and occurs in people who are experiencing a problem with the central nervous system, such as vestibular migraines, that's a type of migraine defined by extreme dizziness, or stroke. A primary care physician may refer a patient to an ear, nose, and throat specialist, that's an ENT specialist, or suggest a neurologist or a cardiologist. That's why getting the diagnosis right is especially important, says Dr. Fife. BPPV will often resolve itself in a few weeks or months, but rather than waiting, patients can try at-home exercises to wiggle the ear crystals back into position. The Epley maneuver, which worked for Smith, is the most well-known, and I'll have that for you in just a few minutes at the end of this article. According to a 2023 study published in the journal Medicine, it improved symptoms of vertigo in 98% of patients. It can also be done preventively, as Smith's neurologist recommended. An over-the-counter drug, meclizine, which is commonly used for motion sickness, can help quell symptoms when they strike. Smith's neurologist also recommended she avoid alcohol, sugar, and caffeine, as they could potentially trigger episodes of vertigo. Stress and inadequate sleep are other possible triggers. "Feeling the room spin was terrifying," says Smith. As she shared her experience with others, she was surprised at how many said they too had experienced vertigo. "This is not some obscure medical condition," she says. "It's more common than you think." And here's a sidebar, at-home treatment. For the most common cause of vertigo, BPPV, your doctor may suggest the Epley maneuver. Perform each step in order, holding each position for 30 to 60 seconds. Number one, sit on your bed. Turn your head 45 degrees toward the affected ear. If you get dizzy when you roll your head to the right, it's likely your right ear. Number two, keeping your head turned, lie back so your head hangs off the bed. Number three, slowly turn your head 90 degrees toward the other side. Number four, roll onto your side in the direction you're looking, then turn your head so that you're looking down. Number five, sit upright, keeping your head turned. Tip, if you can, have someone with you for support as you likely experience vertigo. Next in Reader's Digest, a story of national interest. Real estate agents often work alone and scared. From the New York Times, Deborah Kamen writes, "My Client, My Predator," in Reader's Digest. Sarah Godsey sold auto parts before moving to San Diego and becoming a real estate agent. She didn't have to sit in an office all day, made a good income, and had the freedom to work on her own schedule, all of which she enjoyed. But Godsey also understood it was a very competitive field, as the number of real estate agents across the country had swelled to a record high. So when a homeowner in the nearby town of Oceanside called and said he would consider selling, Godsey, eager to find a property for her client, agreed to meet him at his condominium. Alone. As they talked that afternoon in August 2021, the man began inching his chair closer to hers. Then he reached out, groped her thigh, and forcefully kissed her. "I kind of blacked out a little," Godsey, 37 years old, recalled. "I was trying to be calm and collected because I was by myself in a stranger's house. The door was maybe 5 feet away, but I had no idea what this guy was capable of doing." Across the nation, the majority of real estate agents are women, and they are vulnerable to abuse in an industry that offers few protections, demands that they meet clients alone in empty homes, and encourages them to use their appearance to help bring in buyers. Reports of harassment and occasionally physical violence, including rape and even murder, highlight the risks they face. The National Association of Realtors, or NAR, a trade organization representing 1.5 million members, reports that 62% of its members are women. Many were attracted to the field for the same reasons as Godsey: flexible schedules, a workplace that's almost entirely remote, and a licensing process that can be completed in as little as a few weeks. But the industry is also structured so that 90% of agents are not actually employees of the agencies they work with. They are independent contractors, which means they are not protected under Title VII, the federal law that prohibits discrimination and sexual harassment in the workplace. It also means that many real estate agencies that rely on these agents for the vast majority of their income do not feel obligated or even inclined to offer them any kind of institutional protection or training. For most of the agents out there, it's up to them to come up with safety strategies like sharing their location with a family member or friend, insisting on references before meeting a client, or even carrying a firearm for protection. And so, 6 years after the hashtag MeToo movement ignited a global reckoning about sexual harassment and assault, hundreds of thousands of women across the country are working in an industry that resists new measures to protect them.
That world is pretty much the Wild Wild West, said Kimberly Perlin, a complex trauma therapist in Towson, Maryland, who has treated several real estate agents who were sexually assaulted at work. Anybody can call up and say they have money and want a house, including sexual predators. And in a house, you have an unattended space and an inherent power imbalance because the salesperson wants the sale and the buyer knows it. The NAR has been resistant to require any sort of safety training of its members. Classes in its Realtor Safety Program, which includes webinars on best practices for safety, remain optional. On the group's website, the program makes safety a matter of personal precautions, advising agents to avoid showing houses after dark and always ensure that properties have reliable cell phone service. It's hard to force people to take certain classes, says Tracy Casper, president of the NAR of safety training. Could that become part of what we make mandatory? It could. Have we done it yet? No, we haven't. Real estate agents say the solution requires industry-wide buy-in. Some recommend universal background checks for buyers and making mandatory safety trainings a contingency for all brokerages' memberships in trade organizations. Some suggest that female agents have an option to ask for an escort when client meetings feel unsafe, with their brokerages covering the cost. Godsey began carrying a taser gun after her encounter. She filed a police report but declined to press charges against her aggressor. "I just wanted it on file," she said, "so it's on record." The incident continues to affect both her mental health and her career. "I feel like I haven't been able to do my job to my full potential like I was before because I'm scared," she says. Younger agents and those new to the profession are not always aware of the dangers. "I never thought about it when I was starting out," said Rachel DeSalvo, 41 years old, who has been selling houses in New York and New Jersey for 12 plus years. "I would meet strangers at vacant homes at night." She has faced both sexual harassment while on the job, buyers making innuendos or attempting to grope her, and violence. One seller, angry that she hadn't secured him a higher price, took out an axe in front of her and proceeded to attack the lawn sign that bore her picture. "I didn't know what to do, so I just tried to keep calm," she said. "He was screaming and yelling. In the industry, we call it a mantrum." Surveys by industry groups found that harassment in the industry is commonplace, with most real estate agents reporting that they have either personally experienced or witnessed sexual harassment in the workplace. Working with house flippers when homes sit vacant for prolonged periods has also presented DeSalvo with risks. In November 2022, a squatter laid claim to a recently renovated home that she was trying to sell, and after she asked him to leave the property, he began calling her cell phone. The number was on the lawn's for sale sign at all hours, threatening to have her killed. She got the police involved and eventually had him evicted from the property. DeSalvo now has an alarm button on her phone and keeps pepper spray in her car, which she takes into properties whenever she feels uneasy. She also shares her location with friends or family when going to showings. But she is aware of the industry's catch-22. Every time she asks a new client to provide identification before meeting or refuses to set a meeting after dark, she knows they might just opt to go with another agent. "We don't have an HR department," she said. "If someone does harass you and you complain about it, you basically lose the opportunity to make that commission." DeSalvo is an independent contractor currently working with a Keller Williams brokerage in New Jersey. She notifies the brokerage every time she faces an uncomfortable incident. That follows protocol. Keller Williams's policies and guidelines encourage employees and agents who believe they have been harassed in the workplace to promptly report those facts to their franchisee's management, says Daryl Frost, a company spokesperson, who added that management is also required to investigate. But while DeSalvo has always felt that she receives a sensitive ear, little action follows, she says. After the squatter threatened her, she was left on her own to coordinate with the police. And at a previous brokerage, it was suggested that a male colleague step in to close a deal after she was verbally harassed by the client. But that meant DeSalvo paid the male agent a referral fee out of her own commission. There is no scenario in which the brokerage gets involved unless the police report comes to them directly, she said. In 12 years, I have always been the one problem-solving in these scenarios. Real estate agents also know that their physical appearance is linked to their success. One need only watch an episode of Selling Sunset, Netflix's hit reality show following a group of high-earning female agents to get the connection. The higher the hemlines and the stilettos, it seems, the higher the commissions. Real estate agents use headshots to bring in business because they know their physical appearance is part of their brand. It's really a double-edged sword because, as a realtor, you have to look good, be nice, and sometimes flirt with everybody to make them trust you. But that shouldn't make me a target, says Godsey. Yet the very nature of their jobs, often meeting strangers to woo them into buying property, exposes real estate agents to danger. Those in the industry are well aware of high-profile murders. One agent was killed showing a $1 million home in the year 2008 in British Columbia. Another was gunned down in the year 2021 outside a property she was showing in Florida. In the year 2021 alone, 25 real estate professionals died from violence on the job, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Perhaps no crime sent more shockwaves through the industry than the death of Beverly Carter. Carter had just one more property to show on that September day in the year 2014 before she could go home. It was nearly 6 p.m. and the Arkansas real estate agent called her husband to tell him that she would be home for dinner before getting into her brown Cadillac and driving 30 minutes outside of Little Rock to show a home to a stranger. She was never seen alive again. Carter was 50 years old when she was murdered. Her killer, who lured her to the isolated property by pretending to be an interested buyer, kidnapped her, suffocated her, and eventually buried her body in a shallow grave nearby. He later told reporters that he targeted Carter because, quote-unquote, she was a woman working alone. He was sentenced to life in prison. His wife, who served as an accomplice, received a 30-year sentence. Carter's son, Carl Carter, remembers being woken by the doorbell at 4 a.m. on the Tuesday detectives found his mother's body. She had been missing for 4 days, and a group of her colleagues, knowing that reporters were already camped out at the concrete plant where her body was discovered, came to his home to break the news to him personally. "The industry is operating without guardrails," he said. In the year 2017, he began the Beverly Carter Foundation, a nonprofit dedicated to creating more stringent safety measures for real estate agents. The same year, he and his family filed a lawsuit against Cry Leaky Realtors, the agency for which Beverly had been working as an independent contractor, alleging the firm was aware of the dangers she faced, but never offered any training or safeguards to prevent them. That suit was later dismissed because of the statute of limitations. "No comment is needed," said Harold Cry, president of Cry Leaky, in an email when contacted by a reporter about the case. Too much onus is on agents to create their own safety measures, Carl said. But what is needed is industry-wide reform. Rather than put protocols in place that would protect agents in the field, brokerages have been slow to respond to calls for broader reform, or resistant altogether, he said. I've been told by big-name brokerages, sorry about your mom, but I'm not here to keep people safe. I'm here to make money, Carl said. It's just very much a for-profit industry. The NAR has made other trainings mandatory. In May of 2023, after mounting pressure over discriminatory practices against minorities and appraisal bias, the organization announced that agents must now take regular continuing education classes in fair housing and diversity, equity, and inclusion. The group's webpage offers safety strategy tips like share your schedule with a colleague, assistant, or family member. Check your cell phone battery and signal before heading to an appointment. And never go into attics, crawl spaces, or garages where you could be trapped. The organization conducts an annual survey on safety. In the year 2023, when agents were asked if they'd been a victim of a crime while on the job, 95% of respondents said no. While the organization has touted those numbers as a success, Carl views them quite differently. A few percentage points out of 1.5 million suddenly becomes a really different conversation when you realize it means thousands of people have been victimized, he said. Some female agents, concerned about their safety, are choosing to carry handguns. Donna Hetzler, 53 years old, began carrying a gun on the job years ago after a friend encouraged her to get tactical training and a concealed carry weapons permit because she worked alone so often. The advice proved prescient. She was arranging brochures at an open house in the Denver suburbs in August 2019 when she heard a knock at the door. The tall man with a shaved head who stood outside said he was interested in potentially buying the townhouse she was showing. She let him in, and when he asked to see the upstairs, she led him to the primary bedroom. Then he suddenly pulled up his shirt, revealing a 12-inch knife tucked into his pants. He also reached for a canister of bear spray and doused her in the face. But that day, she had her Springfield 9mm gun hidden in an ankle holster beneath her pants leg. She fired one shot, and he fled. He brought a knife to a gunfight, she said. Her attacker was arrested 4 days later and in January 2020 was sentenced to 16 years in prison. Hetzler now offers trainings to other real estate agents, some of which involve tactical skills, including headlocks and how to handle a gun during an attack. But carrying a weapon, she acknowledges, is a deeply personal decision. If you don't believe in firearms, it doesn't matter to me. There's no judgment. Just find another way to defend yourself, she said. Nothing is worth your life, including a sale. Next, from the art of living, including some food facts and fun, got a crush on crunch? Pickles pack a punch. Here's a scrumptious sidekick, an American partner to the dill pickle article we had a little while ago. What would a Cuban sandwich be without pickles pressed alongside the smoky pork and melty Swiss? Ditto, the piquant pickle marrying spiced meat and garlic sauce in a shawarma, or the 1-2 punch of neon green relish and a dill spear on a classic Chicago dog. But these briny delights aren't just the sandwich's most loyal companion, it's ubiquitous sidekick on a plate as garnish. Pickles can hold their own all on their own, with a crisp acidity and a satisfying snap that makes for a bite like no other. Kosher dills are king in the United States, far surpassing gherkins and bread and butter chips in popularity. Eastern European Jewish immigrants cemented that status in New York City in the late 1800s, when traditional kosher dill recipes called for fresh cucumbers piled in large wooden barrels with dill, garlic, spices, kosher salt, and water. Those barrels, by the way, aren't the best boating vessels, despite the handful of historical daredevils who successfully went over Niagara Falls in one. The first to take that plunge was a school teacher named Annie Edson Taylor, who was strapped for cash and seeking fame. Her 1901 stunt didn't earn her the fortune she had hoped for, but it certainly made for a memorable birthday, her 63rd, no less. After swimming in those barrels in their brine bath, former cucumbers emerge as bumpy, bright green, quote-unquote, half-sours, also known as new pickles. With longer fermentation come the, quote-unquote, full-sours. As pickle push carts popped up along the Lower East Side of Manhattan, so did delis like the legendary Katz's, selling pickles straight out of the barrel and paired up with a mile-high pastrami on rye. Today, the famed eatery's house brined pickles are available by the quart via mail order. Despite all their bright potential, pickles can leave a sour taste. In fact, Spoon University, an online food publication produced by college students, named pickles one of the 10 most polarizing foods of all time, alongside licorice and cilantro. Still, those who relish, forgive us, pickles are super smitten with them. Americans partake in 9 pounds of pickles per person per year. Try saying that 5 times fast. The love affair has only picked up steam. Zippy dill pickle flavor now infuses popcorn, ice pops, even sour beer. Trader Joe's sells pickle seasoning. Fried pickle dip graces the deli case. Pickle pizza with white garlic sauce, mozzarella cheese, and sliced dill pickles posing as pepperoni has found cult status at pizza joints across the country. Millions of TikTok users now hail the quote-unquote chickle, a juicy pickle shrouded in pan-fried provolone, as the ultimate salty sour snack. Millions more have completed the hot pickle challenge, devouring super spicy packaged pickles and posting their reactions. While we await the pickle's next fun fling, there's always that trusty jar calling from the fridge, and something to be said for the real dill. And let's conclude this edition of Reader's Digest with some quotable quotes. First, from Nikola Jovic, the basketball player, in a press conference, "If you want to be successful, you need to be bad. Then you need to be good. Then, when you're good, you need to fail. Then, when you fail, you're going to figure it out." From filmmaker Kenneth Branagh in Vanity Fair magazine, "No good disliking ourselves gives the world an excuse to do the same." From musician Beyoncé from the Renaissance World Tour, "The more I grow, the more I realize it's about joy, not about perfection." From author J.R. Moringer in The New Yorker magazine, "Mornings are my worry time, along with afternoons and evenings." And finally, from Michael J. Fox, actor in AARP The Magazine, "If you don't think you have anything to be grateful for, keep looking, because you don't just receive optimism. You can't wait for things to be great and then be grateful for that. You've got to behave in a way that promotes that." And before we go, this quick anecdote from Crestline.com. Nearly 9 in 10 football fans say they have had more fun tailgating than at the game they tailgated for.
You have been listening to Reader's Digest on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program is replayed after 9 o'clock in the evening. This is John Fisher saying goodbye from Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center in San Antonio.